If I bleed tonight, if I am sad tonight, I don't have a job to find. And if I work tonight, if I'm so tired tonight, I'll fall asleep when I'm home. When I'm home. Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the... I've recorded like three podcasts so far today. The Retro Raw Rundown, the Retro Heat. I'm going to start again. I'm going to keep this in because I can't bother editing it out. Hi everybody, this is the Powerslam Podcast. My name's Kerry McIntosh. I'm here with Finn Martin. He's more professional than me. Here he is. Hi Finn, how are you?
Hey, I'm very well, thanks. How are you, Kenny? You're back from the States. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling okay. So I don't know if I've said this before, but I cannot sleep on flights. Like, I just can't do it. So when I flew back on Wednesday night, I left New York 6:30 local time, and it was a 6.5 hour flight. I got in at 6:30 a.m. UK time to the UK, and then I ended up getting into the hotel here in London at like 8:30 in the morning, and then I went to sleep at 9 a.m. Slept through to 3:30 in the afternoon. Then I was up to about 3 a.m. last night, and I woke up at 9:30 a.m. this morning. So I'm hoping now that's me kind of got through it, and I'm hoping to power through to tonight and then go to bed, and then that's me hopefully back in a regular time scale. But the jet lag kills me, so and I never know what to do, whether I should try and stay up all day or whatever. So I love going to America, and I love the trips, and I love going out, but the return travel and the jet lag is something that I still struggle with, if I'm honest.
Do you think it's the seats, or do you think it's the... I always think it's like the air on aeroplanes.
Yeah, I don't...
I find it hard to sleep on planes as well.
I don't like the air. I can't sleep sitting up. I've never been able to sleep sitting up. But like Ollie, for example, he sometimes takes a little tablet or two to fall asleep. But then my fear with that is, like, what if they don't work and then I end up even worse?
Yeah.
So, you know, but I ended up... So on the way home, I ended up watching some wrestling and watching a couple of movies. I actually watched the movie Green Book.
All right.
Which I would thoroughly recommend. Great film. Which was... And then I watched a movie called Hidden Figures, which is based on a true story about three African-American women who worked for NASA in the early 60s in their space program, and they had quite a lot to do with kind of, making sure that... They were very influential in African-American women getting to do more in those kind of jobs. I would recommend it. It's got Octavia Spencer in it, Kevin Costner, the guy who plays Shelton in The Big Bang Theory's in it. What's her name? The girl who was in Spider-Man. Kirsten, it's going to annoy me now. Fuck is her name?
I know, you mean in the original Spider-Man.
Yeah, what's her name? Kirsten Dunst, that's her name, Kirsten Dunst. But yeah, I watched that in the plane, that was a great film as well, so a couple of movie recommendations. How are you, Finn?
I'm very well, Kenny, very well indeed. I mean, I haven't even left the house, so I'm fighting. I'm having to deal with the problems that you're trying to overcome. So yeah, it feels like it's been a busy week. There's been a lot of wrestling to watch. You know, I'm not complaining, but there's been a lot of wrestling to watch. And we're here to talk about all that wrestling that we've watched right now.
We are. Now, this goes out on Friday if you're on Patreon, Saturday if you're on the regular feed. If you're on the regular feed, why not go to Patreon, sign up, and you get this podcast 24 hours early. So we'd recommend that. But we are...
And our WrestleMania review.
And our 2.5 hour WrestleMania review, where Finn and Sandra and I review the show. Lots of great feedback to that. There is the moment where we break Finn and he drops, he swears, which is very rare for you, Finn.
Well, it is. Yeah, it is. But I mean, you know... When we're talking about John Cena's musical career, I mean, we all have limits. you know, and that was just beyond the pale. So, I mean, I had to reach into, I apologize for swearing. I mean, maybe people like hearing me swear, but he doesn't, I don't swear very often. I think, I remember someone saying to me when I was very younger, that when I was a lot younger, that that swearing shows a lack of vocabulary. So I try to refrain from using profanity on these podcasts, but there are times when you, there are times when you've just got to reach for it, and that was one of those times.
I of course just do not have that problem, and I swear consistently. But no, so I was going to say we're going to do our overrun on Monday because I've not had a chance yet to watch any of the G1 Supercard, so I'm going to try and watch the main event of that. And also we're going to try and watch the Vice documentary on the Macho Man Randy Savage. There's six Vice documentaries coming out. They sound very good. They've got great reviews. So we're going to check them out. And yes. And the Omega documentaries, we'll have that stuff to talk about on Monday, which should be some different content for people to listen to us do. But there's plenty of stuff to talk about today. I think you'll agree.
There is. Yes.
So let's go chronologically. We've always talked about WrestleMania, but I want to get your thoughts on... I've already discussed this with Sondra on Patreon, so I'll probably be a little bit quieter during this part of the show. But let's talk about NXT TakeOver New York. Will we go through the matches?
Let's do that.
Okay, so open the show with a tag team title match for the NXT tag titles with War Raiders taking on Aleister Black and Ricochet. War Raiders end up getting the win in a 21-minute match. What did you think of this as an opener and the result in keeping the belt on the War Raiders?
Yeah, I mean, the result made sense because, as we know, Aleister Black and Ricochet are on the main roster, so it would have really been a step back for them to become NXT Tag Team Champions. I mean, it's hard for me to believe that they're ever going to feature those belts on the main roster. I mean, they may do once or twice, but not as a permanent thing because there's, I think we could agree there's enough titles already on the main roster without adding the NXT Tag Team title as well. I thought it was an outstanding opener. Fans were just so into it. I mean, this was a great crowd. I mean, this is the sort of crowd you want. This is the sort of crowd that makes your show better. So, I mean, yeah, we've talked before about the War Raiders and not really being fans of the characters. You can't fault them in the ring, though, can you, Kenny? I mean, they were dynamite here. They were really good.
They're really good in the ring. I mean, I don't like them, but they're very good in the ring, so I can't really complain about that.
No, I mean, it was the right result. I thought afterwards it was a nice change, a nice departure from the norm with the War Raiders and Aleister Black and Ricochet showing tremendous respect for each other afterwards and hugging. And it really felt like Aleister Black and Ricochet's farewell. I haven't actually read the NXT spoilers yet for the post-WrestleMania period or the post-takeover period. So I'm not sure if they are sticking around in NXT. So I could be wrong about that. But it did feel like Black and Ricochet's departure, their exit from NXT. And it's absolutely the right time for them to say goodbye to this brand and, you know, going full-time with on either Raw or SmackDown, wherever they end up next week.
Then we had Velveteen Dream defend the North American title against Matt Riddle. The story was obviously Matt Riddle dominating the match, and in the end, Velveteen Dream got the fluke pin. What did you make of the interesting story to the match, the psychology of it, and the result to have Dream hand Riddle his first pinfall defeat?
Yeah, it did feel like Riddle was working subtle heel, didn't it? And that because this was a babyface versus babyface match. I thought it was an interesting match for them to present and kind of a brave one as well, because you didn't really want the fans booing either man. And that didn't happen, even though Riddle kind of did work subtle heel there because he was very dominant for a lot of the match. And that was all designed to set up the Dream's big comeback. And when he did fire up there on Matt Riddle, it was a huge reaction. So that worked like a charm. That was very well done. I mean, Dream kicked out of a springboard suplex, and I think he called it the floating bro, which is like a twisting moonsault. So that was a tremendous false finish there. And then Dream came back with Dream scored the pin. Actually, I can't even remember what Dream scored the pin with, but Dream did score the pin.
He scored the pin when Riddle went to go for a... Was it Riddle went to go for the knee.
Yeah.
And then, he went to go for the submission, didn't he? And then when he got the submission in, Dream toppled behind him. And
that's
it was almost like a similar, not the same move, but similar to how Brett pinned Piper or Brett pinned Austin.
Yeah, like kind of like a counter to the submission. That's right. It is coming back to me now, and so that was the end of Riddle's undefeated streak. And actually, similarly to the end of the previous match, we had the mutual respect shown again, where Riddle applauded Dream afterwards, and there was like pause. Would Dream reciprocate? You know, would he show respect for Matt Riddle? And he did. They did the fist bump. So, I mean, I thought that was it was obviously very similar to the end of the previous match, but I thought it worked really well. And again, it cemented the fact that it was two baby faces in there who were striving to prove that who was the best. And on this night, it was Dream who scored the win. I don't think Riddle was harmed in the slightest by this performance. In fact, I think he was greatly enhanced because it was such a good match. I've written here, it was a stunning matchup. Really enjoyed that bout as well. What did you think, Kenny?
Oh yeah, it was a great match. The spot where Riddle, I've said before, Riddle hasn't really worked for me so far in WWE, but this kind of turned my mind on him. And I'm in a hotel here, and there is a massive sound in the background. Hold on, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, so I think that the noise is off now.
So you don't have to evacuate the building, Kenny. You're going to be all right. You're safe.
Well, I'm safe in my luxury panic room that I'm in here. The move where Riddle did where he jumped up onto the second rope and German suplexed Dream from the apron out of the ring, it was just an outstanding move. I've never seen that before.
Yeah, that's right. And that's kind of something you would expect Cesaro to do. And I bet Cesaro was watching thinking, I can't wait to wrestle this guy.
yeah, exactly. So, somebody had said that, a lot of the wrestling in this show is maybe kind of PWG wrestling. And the idea that, that it's that on a bigger stage. And I think that that's kind of some of the things that WWE do well, is they can take something that when it's done right, they can take something that was on a smaller stage and add some great bells and whistles to it, like the Dream coming out as the Statue of Liberty.
Yeah.
And all that kind of stuff. And then really give it a mainstream presentation, which is what I think they did with this. And the story of the match I thought was good, and they had me believing right up until the end that Riddle was going to get the win, but I don't think he came out of it in the loss looking any weaker. I think they actually both came out of it looking a lot better, which is a testament to the match.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I didn't really believe that Riddle was going to end the Dream's reign. It would have been too soon for Dream to lose that North American title. But I mean, everyone in that arena was convinced that
we were biting for it.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's all that matters.
We got Walter versus Pete Dunne for the United Kingdom Championship, 25-minute match, and Walter scores the win with a powerbomb off the top rope, and then a
followed
splash.
By a splash from the
by a splash. Walter gets the win, and a lot slower paced than the previous match. But what did you think of the story they told during it, and the decision to take the belt off Pete Dunne and put it on Walter?
Yeah, it definitely felt like the time for Pete Dunne to drop the UK Championship. I think we talked about this a few weeks ago. I don't know whether Pete Dunne's going to get the call next week and he's going to go up to the main roster, but it feels like time for him to do so. Would you agree, Kenny?
Yes, in the sense of I think he's ready. I think it would be a big blow to the UK brand if he's not there. But then, how long do you hold back somebody who's so good?
For
a brand that, like, is not making you a ton of money, that's not your priority.
Exactly. And the thing is as well, for Pete Dunne, once now he's lost the title to Walter, it's like, what's his motivation to continue to wrestle for NXT UK? He can go back and make a special appearance on a big supercard, but on a weekly basis or on a regular basis, he shouldn't be there. He should be like a representative of NXT UK. And this is what happens when you win the title. You then move on. You move up to the main roster. I think that's the message they should be sending by promoting Dunn to the main roster. It would seem to me to be... It's like if you've held the NXT heavyweight title for a long period of time, you generally then go to the main roster, don't you? So you may not do as well on the main roster as you've done in NXT, but that's generally the way it works. So it felt like time for Pete Dunne to drop the belt. Walter was, I think, the guy who should have dethroned him. As you said, the pacing was a lot slower here, more deliberate. But that was welcomed because we'd had two really fast-paced matches. So the fans, I think, were ready for something different. And this certainly ticked that box. I mean, I thought it was terrific action. The fans just were gripped throughout. I mean, it was a really tough match. I mean, they were pounding the hell out of each other. I mean, this was like going back to old Japan in the mid 90s. This was a tough match. You didn't hear this, Kenny, but on commentary, Ronaldo actually had a Brexit reference, if you can believe it.
Did he?
Yes. So, I mean, to me, just a brutal war. I've written here one word, three letters. Wow. I thought this was fantastic. What do you think?
You know, this was a... I actually think that I enjoyed the match more watching it back on TV. When I was in the arena, I think because it just came off Velveteen Dream, Matt Riddle, there was points where I just wasn't able to get into it, but I did by the end. But then when I watched it back on TV, I think it was a match that played better on TV than in person for the duration. Up next, we had the Fatal 4-Way for the NXT Women's Championship. Shayna Baszler, Io Shirai, Bianca Belair, and Kairi Sane. And I'm going to say it, Finn, my favourite NXT Women's match since Asuka and Ember Moon.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, this was really good. It was kind of different to what I was expecting. I thought Belair had a good night. I mean, obviously, her match with Shayna Baszler at the takeover prior to Royal Rumble, she was really quite badly exposed as somebody who wasn't ready for that spot on that night. And I think with two other competitors in the match, I think she was kind of protected. But I also felt like she did better as well. I felt like she brought a lot more to this match than she had done at the takeover match prior to Royal Rumble. I mean, Kairi Sane and Io Shirai had said that they would battle each other if need be, and they did too, and it was all in the spirit of competition, so it wasn't like there was any fallings out there. Shayna wasn't really in the match as much as I thought she would be. She was, at times, not a factor at all. But in the end, she forced Belair to submit. She had to make a few attempts to get the submission, and Belair really hung on before she finally tapped out. Again, fans really into the match, really propped this up with a tremendous atmosphere. I thought this was a triumph on the night, Kenny. That's what I thought it was. And not just a Shayna match. I thought the other three had a really good night as well. And that was good to see since it was Shayna who was retaining the title.
Yeah, I was very, very impressed with it. Very impressed with all four in the match. And then the main event was the 2 out of 3 falls match of the NXT Championship with Johnny Gargano and Adam Cole. Again, if you've not had a chance, Jeremy Borash produced a 22-minute mini documentary on WWE's YouTube channel following Gargano and Cole around, which is a really, really interesting documentary. So if you get a chance to watch it, it's worth checking out.
Did we see snippets of that with them training?
Yes.
That's right, yeah. And I always enjoy seeing that. Kind of reminds me of The Rock versus Brock Lesnar match at SummerSlam 2002, which was a big success on pay-per-view and a hit in the venue on the night. Perhaps not such a hit for The Rock, who was booed, as I recall, because people realised that he was leaving. But, I mean, I really enjoy seeing those training videos, and I don't know why we don't see more of them. Because, I mean, these guys are obviously in tremendous shape. Why not show us what sort of condition these people are in to impress us more? I don't know why we don't see that more from WWE and pro wrestling in general.
Yeah, I'd like to see it more. I mean, because the story of the documentary is, you know, you see Gargano going back to Cleveland and you see Cole going back and they're doing different training. It's really interesting. So I'd encourage people to check it out if you're looking for something different. But 2 out of 3 falls match, 38 minutes. What did you make of the match, the story and the outcome?
I mean, it was a long match. I mean, Cole scored the first pin with the last shot. Kind of seemed like Gargano went down too easily to that. Gargano equalised with the... it was crossface, wasn't he? And the story was that Cole tapped out immediately so that he wouldn't be injured by the submission hold and could continue and potentially score that last fall and win the vacant NXT title. I mean, it was an amazing match. I really enjoyed it. I mean, I can understand if people wanted to criticize it and say they took too much punishment and they kicked out too many moves. It is hard to argue against that because, I mean, these guys survived everything. I mean, it just the kickouts, it was pretty ridiculous, the number of moves they kicked out of. But for that audience on the night, it was, I mean, they could have wrestled for another 5 or 6 minutes and perhaps fans would have still been popping. I mean, the fans were absolutely electric for the match. So I've got to say it was, again, another huge success with the audience. Really like the aftermath with Candice LeRae out to congratulate Gargano. And then Gargano's on the stage with the title. And Gargano's there like, he's behind me, isn't he? And then Tommaso Ciampa comes out in a neck brace to congratulate him as well. And they all hugged. I thought it was heartwarming, Kenny. Touching. I was welling up there. What did you think?
I think that for me, the first 20 minutes were good. But for me, it was the last 18 for the third fall that really were where it got great. That was where I really got invested. Because I also, with 2 out of 3 falls matches, what I don't like about them is the kind of first two falls, which seem like it's just like you're waiting for that third one. Yeah. But when it got to that third one, I thought it was just some of the best wrestling I've seen ever. And the thing that was so great about the post-match was when Ciampa was out there with Gargano and LeRae, he looks down at the belt at one point for a very brief split second, and that could almost be a story when he returns.
Yeah.
So, I thought it was excellent. Excellent main event, end to an excellent show. What do you think of the show overall?
Kenny, I don't think I've used this before to describe a wrestling show, at least not on this podcast. I'm gonna wheel it out now. I've been keeping this in reserve.
Okay.
To me, NXT TakeOver New York was all killer, no filler.
That's a good way to describe it. It was a succinct, short show. But I would concur with you on that one, for sure.
Yeah, well, it was, I mean, compared to WrestleMania, I mean, I think it was still 3 hours and like 16 minutes or something. So, I mean, I guess comparatively, it was a short event. But I mean, still longer than most WrestleManias.
This is true. Okay, so let's move on. We've got plenty of other stuff to talk about. I do want to bring up the incident from the Hall of Fame with Bret Hart getting attacked by this MMA fighter fan guy who had done it. And, you know, it's been covered kind of everywhere. Is there anything that you, I mean, what do you think about it? And also, is there any other time you can remember an attack on a wrestler? Because, I mean, the thing with this was, it wasn't just an attack on a wrestler, it was an attack on a guy who's a stroke survivor and a cancer survivor and all this kind of stuff. Is there any other big incident you can remember of a wrestler being attacked by a fan? And, you know, were you surprised to see so many people running in and just trying to take the guy down?
Well, I mean, the one people, a lot of people remember, I mean, obviously, back in the kayfabe era, this used to happen all the time. Wrestlers would be stabbed and attacked and, you know, all sorts of things used to happen back then. I mean, late 80s, early 90s, I think really when pro wrestling didn't really seem to be quite as, you know, as the kayfabe rules relaxed, it happened less frequently. So this was something that would happen a lot, especially to heels. Now, obviously, as you just said, Bret Hart wasn't a heel. He's, what is he, 61? He's a stroke
61,
survivor. Yeah. Stroke survivor. And this was completely different to other things that I just described there with people attacking heels because they hated the heels. I don't know. This guy, this was seemed like some sort of attention-seeking exercise. Obviously, it should not have happened. I would think in future, WWE will be taking steps to make sure that no fan can run in on the event again, whether they put them back on the stage or have security everywhere or have, I'm not quite sure what they'll do, but I have a feeling that they will react to this to make sure this doesn't happen again. Obviously he shouldn't have done it. He was arrested and rightly so. I'm not sure what's going to happen to him or he's been, what do we know what he's been charged with? There's conflicting information out there about what offences he's been charged with.
He was charged with, Because of course now I can't find it because I'm looking for it. Hang on, let me. I'll find it. Bret Hart. Attacker charges. I'm googling right now.
Yeah, I mean, I looked at. I mean, there's various footage of it online, and when you see the best quality footage, it really looks like he nailed Bret Hart. And I mean, lots of people ran in and just basically pummeled in and got him off and just got him out of there and handed him over to security.
So apparently he was charged with two counts of third degree assault and one count of third degree criminal trespassing and interfering. Because he actually, I think the report was that when he got Bret down, he did land a punch on Bret.
Right.
And then he also took down a security guard.
So, okay.
I mean, look, I think that, you know, we've come a long way in society in a lot of good ways, but I think that this is one of those scenarios where, you know, back in the day when the wrestler would take somebody out back and beat the piss out of them, this would have maybe been where I would have said that should happen. You know, this guy just, like, I can find a lot of kind of sympathy for people, but when you attack a 61-year-old stroke victim, you kind of, all my sympathy's gone. For yeah. You know, and big props to Dash Wilder, who just nailed the guy on the way out. And you know, Travis Brown, you know, who was also there, that went in. You know, and even Eric Bischoff had put a tweet out about saying, you know, Bret and I will never see eye to eye, but what this guy did was disgusting. It kind of almost feels like sometimes in wrestling, that even though you have all these kind of internal feuds and stuff, that everybody kind of comes together when a thing like this happens. To kind of say, yeah. you know, we're all part of this wrestling thing, and don't you come in and try and fuck it up, you know? I do also want to say just one other quick thing in the Hall of Fame is that for anyone who sort of, like, you know, talks about Ronda Rousey and you know, not respecting wrestling or deserving the spot, she's been front row at the last two Hall of Fame ceremonies and sat there the entire time, cheering everybody on, clapping and being very enthusiastic, which is a thing that Brock Lesnar hasn't done. The Rock never did it when he came back. So I think that she actually shows great respect to wrestling in a lot of ways.
Of course she does. Absolutely she does. She shows great respect to wrestling by trying to be a really good pro wrestler and succeeded. Yep. I mean, that's the ultimate, really, example or the ultimate test of how much respect she has for the business. She's not phoning it in. When has she ever phoned in? When has she never tried to enter the best performance she could, or bring something new to her performance each time she enters the ring? So, I mean, that to me is the ultimate sign of whether someone's got respect for the business or not, if they try and improve their performance each time. So, yeah. I mean, yeah, the thing that happened to Bret Hart, I mean, yeah, it was just terrible. It should never have happened. And I have a feeling that WWE in future will take steps to make sure that nothing like this can happen again.
Speaking of Ronda Rousey, we didn't see her on Raw on Monday. What do you think is the future of Ronda Rousey in WWE?
I have no idea, Kenny. I mean, I imagine that we will be given some indication on Monday or Tuesday, probably Monday, in the start of the Superstar Shake-Up. If she is involved in that, then I imagine she will be returning. We'll be in a far better position to comment this time next week. I mean, this word coming out that apparently the finish of WrestleMania, the finish of the triple threat women's match in WrestleMania was not a botch and was actually booked like that to protect Rousey. That's something I read. I don't know whether that's true or it's not true, because there's a lot of conflicting information that's come out about that. If it is true, then that would indicate that we're going to have a Rousey versus Becky Lynch rematch one-on-one, which is, as I said in our WrestleMania review, which is what most people wanted in the first place. But I think we're going to find out Monday or Tuesday what her future is. If she's part of the Superstar Shake-Up and a big part of it, then one assumes she will be returning. What do you think, Kenny?
I mean, I don't think we've seen the last of her. I just don't think that if she had planned to not come back, I just don't see her and Travis Brown sitting front row at the Hall of Fame and being so involved. I think we'll see her back. I think we see her in a big match at SummerSlam.
I mean, Becky Lynch brought her up in her promo on Raw, so she was mentioned prominently there. And if that was if that, and also they didn't mention the finish and the controversial nature of it. So it kind of felt like they were saving that for when Rousey does return and it can be brought up then. So the fact that Becky Lynch brought Ronda up and she was such a large part of her promo, I think indicates that she will be back. But as I said, I think we're going to find out on Raw or SmackDown next week what her future is in the company.
I do also want to ask you about a big story that broke yesterday/today, and it's with Sasha Banks. And apparently it was in the Observer. There's a few other outlets have reported it. I think Slice Wrestling had talked about the idea that Sasha Banks had found out on Sunday that WWE were going to be switching the belts to the Iconics. She wasn't happy about it because she had thought that they were going to be getting a long title reign and had a chance to do something. So there are reports that she wanted to leave the company. She asked for her release at WrestleMania. The company are said to be telling her to take a little bit of time and see if she, you know, try and calm her down. She wasn't on Raw on Monday. She pulled out of a Wendy Williams appearance on Wednesday. She's previously responded to tweets by The Revival, basically making it like she wants out. She's put an Instagram post talking about how she wants change. What do you make of all this? And, you know, talk a little bit about Sasha Banks' place in the company and what you think would be the best thing for her going forward.
Well, I do understand the position she's in. And if you go back and watch the WrestleMania Women's Tag Team title match, and there was like a shot of Sasha Banks and Bayley outside the ring after they had lost the title, and the pair of them are just sort of covering the faces, like looking at the mat. And I think they were both really upset by the outcome of the match. I think the story is genuine. The fact that, and she's acknowledged, hasn't she, on Twitter or is it Instagram? She's acknowledged anyone on social media that something is going on. If only you knew. I think that was the hashtag she used or something like that. So she's obviously really upset about what's going on. It was a strange segment, wasn't it, on Raw when Alexa Bliss, she called out both Bayley and Sasha Banks, didn't she, Kenny?
Yeah, she'd actually called them both out on social media earlier in the day. So yeah. It was kind of, and then just Sasha wasn't on the show.
Yeah, and then Bayley came out and Alexa Bliss beat Bayley handily. I mean, that was a bad couple of days for Bayley, losing the tag team title at WrestleMania and then getting treated like it was Extreme Rules 2017, the famous kendo stick match.
Oh God, don't bring that back.
Yeah. So it was having flashbacks to that match. And I didn't think Alexa Bliss really gained anything from the win. I mean, a lot of people knock Alexa Bliss for not being a very good performer. And I could kind of see what they would think, why people have that view of Alexa Bliss from her performance in that match with Bayley on Raw. So, I mean, that was a bad night for Bayley, not a great night for Alexa Bliss either, even though she went over. So, yeah, Sasha Banks, you look at it. She had the match with Ronda Rousey at Royal Rumble. It was like they had like a really good match there. Then Bayley and Sasha win the tag team title in the Elimination Chamber, which was an astonishingly good match. I mean, so many people had a great night there. And then they went to NXT and didn't really do anything when they were there. And then there just seemed to be a lot of things they could have done. I mean, maybe they should have seen it coming, Kenny, because the Iconics had scored a win over Sasha Banks and Bayley on SmackDown, hadn't they, in a tag team title match?
Yeah.
In the run-up to WrestleMania. Maybe they should have seen it coming. I don't know. Apparently, they only found out on the day that they were losing the championship. Yeah, I can understand her frustration. I can understand why she's upset, because it does really feel like, you know, she was basically in purgatory with that never-ending, interminable storyline with Bayley. Was it last year were they going to split up? What are they going to do? And that just never ended. And maybe she sort of foresees a return to that territory of just being this meandering figure who the company is not really treating as a priority. And after she's had that little taste of stardom again, or actually quite a big helping of stardom again with the Rumble match, the Elimination Chamber win, and then the championship reign that ended at WrestleMania, maybe she sort of feels that this is like some major career regression, which it feels like, and that she doesn't really have a starring role in the company anymore, and that it's going to be like 6 months or 9 months or a year before they're going to do anything with her again. So I do understand where she's coming from.
Do you think Sasha is a talent who, you know, should be doing a lot more, or do you think they've got her kind of in the right spot?
Well, I mean, the thing is, I do understand where she's coming from, but basically, she should not be responding like this, because you've got to be solid and you've got to take the rough with the smooth in pro wrestling. So they drop the tag team title at WrestleMania. They're upset. Bayley was treated like a jobber on Raw. But the way that you get over with the company is by losing with a smile, right? And just being available and doing what you're told and not overreacting like this. I mean, I understand why she's frustrated. I understand why she's upset, but it does also feel like an overreaction. I mean, Bayley and Sasha Banks could become tag team champions again. I mean, the Iconics, they're only going to hold the title for a couple of months, maybe. This cannot be a long-term thing. So, I mean, Banks and Bayley could be the team that dethrones them. Now she's reacted like this. Is the company going to push Banks and Bayley again? Because can it rely on these two? Can it rely on Banks? Is she going to react like this each time she's asked to lose a title? And if so, how can they really push her as a top card, or top card for, as far as the females are concerned, a top card entity? They can. They've got to be able to depend on people, and they've got to know that they're going to do what the company asks, and they're going to do it to the best of their abilities and not complain about it, and show up for work the next day and make appearances on, was it the Wendy Williams show, Kenny? I think it was, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was the Wendy Williams show where she was due to appear on Wednesday.
That's it. So she didn't appear on that and pulled out citing personal reasons because she's all pissed off because she's lost the tag team title. So, I mean,
can you imagine, like, pulling it of a PR appearance because you lose the tag team titles?
Exactly. So while I do understand why she's reacted like this, at this point in her career, she shouldn't be reacting like this. She should be doing what she's told and working towards another tag team title reign and trying to show the company that Sasha and Bayley are the team that should dethrone the Iconics and not behaving like this, especially when it comes to public appearances. I mean, you make those public appearances, you go on, you put on a brave face, say all the right things, and then, I don't know, ring your mates up or go and sit in the car and get in a huff. You know, you're publicly... You cannot do this if you want the company to endorse you and to feature you as a star. So I don't know what's going to happen next, but this is maybe it's time for her to leave, Kenny, because I think this will be held against her by the company, the way in which she's reacted to this loss. And I've got to say, rightly so.
Yeah, I mean, she has had a lot to contend with. She has had a lot of stuff to deal with, but, you know, she's being paid a lot of money and being paid pretty well, and you kind of have to just accept that that's... I mean, like, I know Drew McIntyre had said, you know, he sees all these people bitching on social media, and it's like... Because there is a thing right now where there's a lot of people... There's a lot of kind of press about WWE, whether it's wrestlers saying they want to leave, or, like, Naomi saying that she hates the fact that there's no title match, or former announcers saying that Michael Cole used to yell at them and all this kind of stuff. There's a lot of people speaking up right now in a way that I'm surprised that it's allowed to happen. Because I remember when I worked at a YouTube channel, not to be named, you know, if we were under strict instruction to not mention who was in charge by name. You know, you were not allowed to reveal it. You know, when I was working, I mean, I would always have a little bit of a kind of, you know, like I'd make a facial expression or something which would allude to something. I would never outright say, I want to leave, let me go. You know, even if that's how I felt. So I feel you have to keep a degree of professionalism in it. But it'll be interesting. I mean, Sasha's not really meant anything since the feud with Charlotte in 2016, really. So it's been a while. But I think she would benefit. I think if she left and she went to the AEW or something, I think she would make it her mission to prove them wrong for not pushing her. And I think that would be a great catalyst. That's who AEW should want to be signing. It's people who want to come in and really make a difference, not come in and just rest on a big contract.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. But I mean, there's a lot of people when you think about it. I mean, look at Nia Jax. She had a great Royal Rumble. Didn't she was basically irrelevant at WrestleMania. Wasn't on Raw, as I recall, this week, and she kind of feels like she doesn't really matter. But she's not having a meltdown. So I mean, that's the way it is. I mean, look at Kevin Owens. You know, the guy who was supposed to wrestle Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania wasn't even on the card. So I mean, this is what happens sometimes, and you've got to wait your turn. And I mean, I get it. I get the frustration, but it's like you've got to deal with this. You've got to be emotionally stable enough to deal with the troughs as well as the peaks, because in pro wrestling, it's going to happen. You're going to lose. It's you know, it's and it's going to be beyond your control because because the nature of the business. So I don't know. I mean, maybe it's time for her to go. I think this is going to follow her around this episode for a long time, and she's going to have to basically prove herself all over again that they can depend on her and that she's not going to throw a fit if she's asked to lose and blah blah blah. So I think this is I think she really needs to go. I think this is going to be a problem for her if she decides to come back.
Well, you know, I remember when I left said YouTube channel, and there was a company who I was talking to, maybe going to work for them, and they'd said to me, "Well, you know, you did this big post on social media when you left the other company. You know, how can we be sure that you're not going to do that to us?" And I was going, "Well, but the thing with wrestling is like you can't really. I mean, once you leave, you're allowed to make a statement about it." Like you're allowed to, you know, that's you can't because you know a lot of wrestling is to do with your public image, right? About
Sure.
it on social media. So, like, and I'm not a wrestler. I'm just somebody who presented videos on a YouTube channel. But if I had left somewhere and said nothing, people would have been wondering why. So I had to make a statement, but then I had to justify that statement to someone who was thinking about employing me at the time. So things can come back to bite you, you know? But I mean, like for me, I stood by what I'd said and said, look, I didn't bury them in anything. I just said, this is what happened. This is why I left. Short and succinct. Thank people for my time there and moved on. So, you know, you kind of have to, if you're going to do something, you need to be willing to sort of stand by what you did. And I just don't know if what Sasha's done this week is something that she's going to want to stand by.
Yeah, I will just say that, Kenny, that some of my best interviews in Powerslam were with bitter and twisted and pissed off and furious and livid and you name it wrestlers who were raging after a bad experience with a wrestling company. And I did the interview with him afterwards, and some of my best interviews were with people who were basically feeling the same sentiments that Sasha Banks is experiencing right now. So I just want to mention that right now.
And if Sasha does end up leaving, Finn will be trying to get her email address to get an interview. So there you
Absolutely,
go.
absolutely, I will be.
We
Come on,
should
Sasha, ring it.
we should also bring up that apparently Brian James, Road Dogg, has stepped down as the head of SmackDown Creative. There was a report by PW Insider that he had become increasingly frustrated with the changing of the scripts all the time, the long hours, and he finally hit breaking point on Tuesday SmackDown. He's going to be transitioning to another role in the company, but Pro Wrestling Sheet had said that he might fill the behind the scenes role that Arn Anderson had. There's various things he might be doing, but were you surprised to see Road Dogg step away from the role? And do you think that does it even matter? Because you know, ultimately, it all goes through to Vince. What did you make when you read that he was no longer going to be in creative?
I mean, maybe he's just had enough. I mean, it's the sort of job that you cannot do. I mean, obviously Vince has done it indefinitely, but it's the sort of job that's usually kind of high turnover of staff in that role, because I mean, it's a very challenging job. It's a very stressful job, and I can understand why he would be frustrated in the situation that he was in. Maybe it was just time for him to do something else. And it's probably time for somebody. I mean, let's face it, he picked a really good time to go. We've got the Superstar Shakeup next week. So whoever comes in, if they appoint someone by Tuesday, I don't know whether they will, maybe somebody will just be promoted. I'm not sure what's going to happen. But he did pick a good time to go. So I think he'll win, you know, positive, he'll win high marks backstage for doing going at the right time and sticking in the job. until it was time to step aside and let someone else take over. I just think it's one of these things that just naturally happens from time to time, that people are just, well, you know, I'm burnt out as a booker, I'm burnt out as head writer, I'm going to step away and do something else. It's time for someone else to have a go. So I think it's time to go.
And also there was another creative guy called R.D. Evans, like his name was, who was fired because Bret Hart mentioned Vince McMahon in his speech at the Hall of Fame, even though DX did it later that night. I mean, that's the kind of stuff where you just kind of go, it's embarrassing.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's... And it's funny because it's around the same time when I read this article yesterday. Who was it that he'd spoken to? Triple H spoke to Fightful about some things. And he talked about Vince McMahon not getting enough credit for his ability to adapt. And you're going, in some ways, you know, that's true. You know, the network's a very forward-thinking idea and all that kind of stuff. But then when you read things like somebody's getting let go because they had someone mention Vince by name, I mean, that's when you kind of think, it leaves me feeling pretty uneasy.
Well, I know what you mean, Kenny. I mean, it kind of feels like it was his time to go as well. He must have just been on the verge of losing his job, and that would have been the final straw. I mean, I know they say that Vince doesn't like being mentioned in Hall of Fame speeches. That was a story, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
He was blamed for Vince being brought up in Bret Hart's speech. That's correct, isn't it? And then he was brought up later in the DX speech as well. And was apparently fired on the spot backstage. I mean, it is just a strange way to go about business in a company that's been traded publicly for, is it 20 years this year? And a company that's on course, I think, gross $1 billion in 2019. I'm sure they will do that this year. It's like these practices seem very wrestling types, like some from the USWA in 1992, you know, of like somebody's pissed off Jerry Lawler or Jerry Jarrett, so they got fired, you know, because they didn't make the coffee right or you know, something like that. It does seem really petty, but I know WWE is like that in many cases, but it feels to me like it was just his time to go. And this was just the last straw. You're gone. That's what it feels like to me. And maybe it's a good thing for him. Maybe he just had enough. And I think WWE is one of those companies where if you don't fit in and they don't want you there, I think they can make your life a misery. And I think when it reaches that point, you're probably better off either leaving of your own accord or being handed your walking papers and finding a job somewhere else that's going to appreciate you for what you can contribute. And the good thing now, Kenny, in 2019, is there are options for these people, or more options than there have been for a long time. So maybe this guy will land on his feet. Hopefully he will.
Before we talk about Raw and SmackDown, we should know, I just thought this was great, AEW are going to be part of an event in late June in Daytona Beach called the Fighter Fest, which is a play on the 2017 horror show that was Fire Festival. There's a great documentary about that on Netflix. And they've announced that at Fighter Fest, there's going to be a six-man tag with Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks against Pac and the Lucha Brothers. And you know, if you actually go on, AEW had posted a thing where they said, you know, go to fighterfest.com, and they've kind of put up this kind of some joking stuff. So, for example, like, you can buy, what are the tickets? You can buy Jericho. So there's loads of packages that are like sold out. So one is Jericho's lion taming. Learn how to tame exotic animals with Chris Jericho. Lions are guaranteed to submit to you, then enjoy swimming with the lions that you've tamed. Package includes waterproof LED jacket, clipboard, accommodates to, and a gourmet cheese sandwich. And they've got all these like fake packages that are sold out, and they've got one that's like all-in package. If you want to get the full experience of Fighter Fest, this is for you. You get everything above, and the price point is $3.5 billion. And it just struck me that like we're in a time where, you know, there's criticisms of WWE for being out of touch, and AEW are just making this really on-point, current joke that just makes them look incredibly cool and hip to what's going on. which I thought was interesting, given that they're just getting started. Because I watched that and I was like, that's really funny, it's really current, and it's playing off, you know, what that very famous Netflix documentary. So I thought that was really good. But what do you make of them doing stuff like this, and then also announcing this huge six-man tag for the Daytona Beach event that is partnered with the Gaming Festival in June?
Well, I mean, it's great exposure to people who may not be aware of them. I mean, let's face it. I mean, the guys, the top guys that are working for AEW, they're not really wrestling that often at the moment. So I'm sure they'll be happy that they're getting another match, and I'm sure they'll be going out there with the intention of performing to the best of their capabilities, which I know they usually do anyway in front of this audience that may not know who they are and may never have heard of All Elite Wrestling. So I think it's a really good thing for them. I will say the fact that they're not running shows at the moment, then for the next show, or the first show rather, for All Elite Wrestling is not until next month. They're not doing TV. All those rumours that a TV deal should be announced quite soon. There was something mentioned.
So there's a Twitter account called Fight Oracle and they reported that Warner Media and Turner, maybe if they can get the deal done in time, because there is advanced talks, I think it's at the stage of. It's not preliminary. It's definitely not signed, but it's in discussions. That All Elite Wrestling would be a 2-hour weekly show on TNT.
Yes.
Later this year, in October, AEW have been quite clear they want to have a multi-platform existence. And The Wrap, which is another outlet, had noted that Turner's Bleacher Report Live platform would be a very natural fit for that kind of output.
Yes.
So it feels like that could be what it is. I mean, can you talk to people about how big would it be for AEW if they were to get 2 hours on TNT every week?
Well, it would be huge. I mean, presumably this is where the money is going to come from to pay these big salaries that all these people are apparently signing. I mean, if they're on TV again 2 hours a week, I mean, on one hand, it's tremendous exposure. If they're getting paid a lot of money from Turner, which hopefully they will be in order to actually make this company a success financially, then that'll be really good. So, I mean, yeah, it's going to be huge for them, and it's going to enable them to promote pay-per-views every month or every other month, or big shows every other month, or however they want to play it. But the flip side to that, Kenny, is it's a lot of pressure. And we were just talking then about this event that they're participating in and this promotional thing that they're doing. Right now, they're not really doing that much. You contrast it with what WWE has to put out each week, and those guys are overworked. They're putting so much product out there, and they probably don't really have time to think about doing things like that as well. All Elite Wrestling, on the other hand, is in a position where it's probably got time to sort those things out and to pursue those things and to have their finger on the pulse. Once they're putting out a 2-hour weekly TV show each week, if that is indeed what happens, they're going to be under a lot more pressure. If TNT / TBS, whichever they end up on, if that's indeed the station or the company that they end up doing a deal with, if they cut this deal with them and it pays them a lot of money, they are going to have to deliver big ratings. Because, I mean, these stations don't pay a lot of money for a TV product that does not draw eyeballs, because then they can't sell ads and the rest of it. So, I mean, they're going to be under a lot of pressure to deliver the numbers. So I think things are going to be very different then, Kenny, once they have this TV show. Because there'll be no excuses. If they're putting out a weekly show, that means they're going to have to come up with a lot of long-term storylines. They're going to have to do that every week. It's not just going to be a 3-times-a-year thing. So they're going to be in this position like WWE is, where the pressure's on to deliver the numbers and to deliver the content that is good more often than it is bad. And I think that's a lot more difficult than people think it is. You know, doing it every week and pulling those numbers every week and peaking everything before your big show and everything. I mean, you go back and look at All In and say, well, that was a huge success. And of course it was. It wasn't like they had to produce a load of TV in the run-up to it, and then the show at the end of it. So it's obviously a huge game changer in terms of their position in the wrestling industry, because they'll have primetime TV each week, assuming this is happening. But also that comes with a tremendous amount of work as well, and a tremendous amount of pressure to make it work each week. So, I mean, if they're going to be serious players and they're going to change wrestling, which apparently they intend to do, then they need this TV deal. I mean, that's fair to say, isn't it, Kenny?
Yeah, no, I mean, it is. I mean, I wonder, you know, without getting ahead of ourselves, I mean, I don't mean to say this in a sort of hyperbolic sense, but I didn't think in my lifetime that we would see a wrestling company come along and get on TNT for 2 hours weekly again. So I think it's quite exciting, the idea that that could happen. But I think the only concern is, not a concern, but the thing that's going to be is, can they convert this into viewers?
Yeah.
And I think they will be able to, because I think that, you know, the other thing is that if it's a 2 hour TV show every week, I think that's manageable for something new to get into. Whereas, you know, Raw, it's like there's 3 hours of Raw, and there's the rumors that SmackDown might go 3 hours, and nobody's got time to develop a new hobby where you need to do 6 hours a week to keep up with it.
No.
Whereas, you know, Jericho's a big name. The Bucks and Cody have done a really good job of marketing themselves. So I think they've got a good shot, and having JR on board as well. We should mention that. You know, he's been announced. That's going to help them, because he's got experience being a, you know, part of the biggest wrestling company in the world when they were at their peak behind the scenes. So I think they've got a decent shot at it. What does your gut say? Do you think TNT is the right move for them as a channel to go to?
Oh yeah, well, I mean, it's as JR wrote this week. He was sort of hinting at where AEW might end up if it gets this TV deal. It's going to be a channel that everyone can find. It's not going to be some channel that only like 25% or 50% of the nation have access to, and they've got to watch it online. I mean, the theory is, if you're going to be taken seriously as a contender to WWE, you need to be on mainstream cable. You know, that's where you need to be positioned in terms of public perception. And people will immediately see it as, well, wow, this is on one of these main cable channels. It's got a big budget, which I'm sure it will have. It looks great. It does all these things that WWE does, and it's a different product. I mean, really, in terms of, can they make it over the long haul? I don't know. I mean, as you said, Raw's 3 hours a week. SmackDown's 2 hours per week. SmackDown could well be extended. I hope they don't do that. There's all this other product on the WWE network that we're aware of. There's all these other wrestling promotions out there. So there's a lot of competition for wrestling fans' time. That's not to say that a product that's really good and different, which one imagines All Elite Wrestling will be, at least at first, cannot command the attention of wrestling fans, who will then just stop watching something that's not as good. So it certainly can succeed. It just can it over the long haul, because they've got to deliver week after week after week. This isn't like putting on 3 or 4 big shows per year that you've got this captive audience that the Elite, or the Bullet Club as it used to be, the Elite have developed, who love everything they do. In order for this to succeed, All Elite Wrestling, they've got to attract a much larger audience. It's not going to be this cliquey audience that the books and all the rest of the Elite have fostered, have developed. They're going to have to reach a much larger audience who are not currently fans of them. So that's going to be tricky. Can they do that in the long run? Can they draw in those viewers who are not currently fans of them, which they're going to have to do in order to make this a success? So we will see, Kenny.
Okay, so let's just finish off with Raw and SmackDown. Let's just kind of go through the big talking points. Obviously on Raw, we had the cameo from The Undertaker with Elias, the return of Sami Zayn, the debut of Lars Sullivan, one of the worst bait and switches of all time with the winner-takes-all match to then be a mid-card tag team committing and interrupting them. What did you make of the post-WrestleMania Raw? How harpered or hampered by the superstar shake-up were they? And overall, just what were your thoughts on the show?
I mean, I think we said on the WrestleMania review that it kind of felt like these programs were just going to be sort of almost lame duck shows where they were between this big WrestleMania show and then these big shake-up programs. So it was almost more going to be a case of just filling time rather than really developing anything new. As you said, The Undertaker came out and interrupted Elias. I really enjoyed that segment. That's something that I would have preferred had happened at WrestleMania. But
I wonder why.
It was on Raw, and that's good enough for me. I will say, I thought Elias's timing on the big boot was perfect. That big boot that The Undertaker hit Elias with was one of the best big boots Undertaker's done in years. Then he hit him with the was it the choke slam, and then he hit the tombstone pile driver. So yeah. I thought that went down really well. The other big thing on the show for me was Becky Lynch and Lacey Evans. Now, Lacey Evans, ever since her Royal Rumble, is the word calamity. Well, if it wasn't a calamity, it wasn't far off. WWE obviously recognized that, you know, there was some creases there in the act. There was things needed to be smoothed out. So they wouldn't let her anywhere near the wrestling ring on television. They wouldn't let her do anything physical on television. And here we were. We had Becky Lynch out there doing a promo, talking about her journey to the title. She mentioned that, you know, whenever Ronda Rousey wanted a rematch, she was ready to go, which goes back to what we were saying earlier. Will there be a rematch? I think, well, we'll find out next week. And then Lacey Evans came out and she hit Lynch with the woman's right. They had a scuffle on the ramp. I didn't really think it looked that great. I thought Evans looked better on SmackDown the next night, particularly in the way in which Lynch sold the attack on SmackDown the next night. I thought Lynch did a really good job there. This didn't really look that great. So I do worry about Lacey Evans versus Becky Lynch. But this, for me, is the real test of Lynch. Lynch, up until this point, this year she was in the ring with Asuka, who's obviously one of the company's best performers. She was in the ring with Charlotte and Ronda Rousey, who are two other of the company's best female performers. Now she is the champion. It's up to her to bring inferior talents up to her level. So this Lynch versus Lacey Evans program is going to be a huge test, not only for Lacey Evans, but also for Becky Lynch as champion. So I'm going to be monitoring this very closely, Kenny. I think, you know, Lacey Evans is somebody that they like. They think she can be a star. I mean, she's got a real swagger to her, something quite sexual about her as well. So there's something, you know, I think she's somebody that can be a star, but she's just got to be able to do it in the ring. So it's up to Lynch to make that happen and to help her out. And also up to the people laying out these matches to make sure Lacey Evans shines and she's not asked to do something that she can't do. And if that means booking her against Becky Lynch in a short match, then so be it. For God's sake, don't expose her again like they did at Royal Rumble by asking her to do a bloody 29-minute performance, which is, I think, what they asked of her at Royal Rumble. That was just too much for her. So I thought that was a big part of the show. As you mentioned, we had Seth Rollins out at the beginning of the show. No Brock Lesnar, no Paul Heyman there. Rollins admitted that he might have used questionable tactics to defeat Lesnar, but he didn't do anything that Lesnar wouldn't have done. Rollins said that he'd heard that Paul Heyman and Lesnar had flown to Las Vegas, and he said that he hoped they stay there. And then New Day came out, Kofi Kingston was there, and they announced the winner-take-all main event. Now, the problem with this, Kenny, is that I don't think anyone in that building really believed that this match was going to take place and there was going to be a winner and both one person was going to leave with both titles. It didn't feel like the audience really bought that at all.
But when I was there, I think the issue that I've got with it is that I don't think anybody bought that was going to happen, but I think that people thought, right, if this match is happening and it's going to be interrupted, it's going to be interrupted by something big.
Yeah.
People thought that it would be baited or sweat. I mean, people in our section were talking, you know, is it going to be Undisputed Era coming in? Like, what's going to be the thing? And I think that what they did was they gave you such a letdown of an interruption that it just felt like a huge disappointment.
It absolutely was. It was a huge disappointment. So, I mean, they had the match and it sort of felt like the audience, I don't know where the audience was really that into it. Maybe it was the babyface versus babyface thing. Maybe they were sort of I know, managing their expectations because they knew that something was going to happen. And maybe it was a combination of those things. Maybe people were tired from WrestleMania the night before because they didn't get in until 3 a.m. That could have been part of it as well, Kenny. I think that's reasonable to say.
Oh, yeah, 100%. But you know, people, I being in the building, people, when that winner-take-all thing was announced, people were very excited. But I think people were also excited the idea of what was going to interrupt. They expected something big. They didn't get it. And I think that for that specific thing, the company need to take some ownership of why that crowd kind of went off script, because they gave them such a letdown of a interruption.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, the bar came out and it's like, well, what's going to happen? Oh, you're going to give us these two guys. They're the ones who are going to interrupt it. And people rejected that match immediately. And then Rollins or Kingston, I can't remember who it was, said, you know, you two in the ring now, we'll beat you down. And then they beat them in what was such a flat match as well. I mean, I know it didn't have much chance because the audience had just said, what is this? How dare you? How dare you give us this as a substitute for a winner-take-all match that you've been promoting throughout the show? So it did really feel quite offensive, certainly a bait and switch. And just, yeah, I think WWE didn't really care. I just don't think they were bothered. I think they knew this would be the response, but they're just like, well, it's the once-a-year WrestleMania audience. They're going to be back next year anyway. I really feel like WWE took its audience for granted here. And they're like, well, they'll be back next year. We'll be next week. We're going to be in, is it Montreal for the Superstar Share Cup? That'll be a different audience. Everything's going to change. Who cares? I think it was really, this was reeking of WWE arrogance, Kenny. That's not. Yes. That's, I think that was the thing. Wasn't that the product that Rick Martel used to spray upon people?
It was. He used to spray WWE all over people.
So there's that. I mean, also on the show, she said Sami Zayn returned. He blasted the audience. I mean, he had a match with Finn Balor, and that felt like really flat as well. I mean, it's just such a nothing match, which was very disappointing. And then Sami Zayn afterwards blasted the audience for criticizing WWE, and they're having this inflated sense of self-importance. He referred to the audience as bloody delusional. I mean, to me, that was he was basically relaying Vince's opinion of anyone who doesn't cheer everything WWE does. That's what this segment was.
I will say, I think this is going to be great for Zayn, though, because I don't think Zayn right now would be in any way a top babyface for them. So if he's on the heel side, he will get higher on the card, and I think that his shtick will be pretty entertaining. And I think he'll do pretty well with it. And I think the fact that he's kind of, like you say, kind of speaking Vince's words, we'll probably do what usually happens, and that it'll get him over in a way they didn't think that he would, and then hopefully they go with it.
yeah. That is the best case scenario outcome. We'll see if it happens.
So yeah, I thought decent Raw until the main event kind of let down thing. It also shout out to Ricochet and Black and Gable and Rude, who had a really good match in spite of the crowd shitting on it. What did you make of SmackDown? SmackDown felt like a bit more of an underwhelming show. What did you make of it, and what are your highlights?
Yeah, it just felt like, again, WWE had really taken the night off, just thinking, oh, well, everything changes next week, so let's just... I mean, like, we had another Kofi Kingston title celebration. We just had that the night before. And then that ended the show as well. By the end of it, I was sick of Kofi Kingston title celebrations. Thanks, Kenny. I've had enough. So, I mean, it just...
By the end of SmackDown, we were like, I can't read this anymore. I can't listen to that theme song anymore. I've celebrated it enough.
Yeah, exactly. So and then New Day were out, and then the bar came out and to interrupt, and they sort of said, we saved the match last night. So that was a bit of an inside joke that got bombed. And then Drew McIntyre was announced as their partner, New Day, and the bar agreed to wrestle. The bar added Drew McIntyre to their team to finish the show with a six-man main event. So I felt like it was a bit of a flat start to the show. And the whole show just didn't really feel like it mattered, Kenny, to be honest with you. That's probably the best thing on the show, I think, was the Usos defending the SmackDown tag team title against the Hardy Boys. Fans were really into this. I think this was the highlight of the show. And it was great to see Jeff and Matt win the tag team title. I don't know how long they're going to hold the belts for, but at least they feel relevant again now they're champions. So I think, to me, that was the highlight of the show.
Yeah, I'm hoping to maybe see them in the revival going at it soon. That'd be good.
Yeah, just want to mention, we already mentioned the Becky Lynch versus Lacey Evans segment here. I thought Lynch sold really well on SmackDown, so full credit to her there. Lars Sullivan came out to destroy Matt and Jeff after they had won the tag team title. We should mention that Lars Sullivan had appeared on Raw as well. Baron Corbin had been out gloating about his victory over Kurt Angle. Kurt Angle came out to get the last laugh. Then Lars Sullivan arrived and gave Kurt Angle a freak accident. That's his big move, isn't it? So it didn't really go down that well, the Lars Sullivan running. It went down even worse on SmackDown. You could hear resentful boos when Lars arrived to destroy the Hardys, and even chants of "You can't wrestle." The outlook, based upon the reactions on Raw and SmackDown, the outlook is seeming quite bleak for Lars Sullivan. Maybe things will be different next week. For his sake, I hope they are.
Yeah, and I think I'm happy for Lars Sullivan that he got to work through his issues and come back, and you know, seems like a player now. So
yeah, definitely. I mean, we had a New Day versus the Boundary McIntyre main event. Drew McIntyre disappeared before the end of the match.
Yeah, and apparently the reason was they just didn't want him around for the result because they want to keep him a top guy, and they just thought, we'll just have him leave. I mean, what?
What was that?
Talk about phoning it in.
I mean, this here was the... And I thought, oh, Drew McIntyre, he's been added for a reason. No, he hadn't been. And I thought, Drew's going to pin Kofi and then he's going to receive a title shot the next pay-per-view Money in the Bank. That's it. I've got it all worked out. And no, instead, Drew wasn't even around for the finish. And the New Day won. Kingston pinned Sheamus. So we can have another celebration with Kofi and his wife and his kids. Don't need to see any more of those celebrations.
Yeah. So so that's it for us. That's it for us for the main podcast. Like I said, we're going to be back on Monday over on Patreon for the Overrun to talk about the Omega documentary, the Macho Man documentary, the G1 Supercard. And then next week when we come back for the main show, we will be dissecting and analysing all the facets of the superstar shakeup from Montreal. So
indeed, yeah, look forward to that, Kenny. And look forward to things. Where is it all going to go? Hopefully they've got some big things lined up for us.
But to finish it off, give us your plugs, and where can people find you and what have you got going on?
Yeah, my website's finleymartin.co.uk, as people know, and my Twitter is @FinleyMartin. Where can people find you, Kenny?
You can find me at KennyMC1985 or at @inside_theropes on Twitter. You can get tickets to Booker T in July at insidetheropes.co.uk/BookerT, and youtube.com/insidetheropes for loads of interview content from WrestleMania weekend with Mick Foley, Matt Hardy, The Iconics, The Bar, The Revival, and many, many more. And also, you can go to patreon.com/insidetheropes to get bonus content, articles, interviews, pay-per-view reviews, retro pay-per-view reviews, and much, much more. The Pod of Thunder is free for a month, so God help me if whatever they say on that podcast that people can hear in a free feed. So thanks for listening, everybody, and we will talk to you soon. If I be tonight, if I'm sad tonight.